everyone. Welcome to the Dear Family Courts podcast. My name is Lisa Welter, and I am your host. My good friend Jen Konieczny is taking this month off, as I have been doing tons of research and wanted to just share a little bit more about some specifics within the mediation environment to help mediators become more effective in their work, or for families as they are contemplating using mediation, what they can expect or ask for from their mediators when it comes to the type of mediation. We talked about that in our first week in April. Then we talked about how to bring more balance to the mediation setting when it comes to legal counsel and making sure those adversarial tones are reined in so that self-determination, the exercising of free will, can take place. Those first two episodes are very specific to the role of the mediator. How does the mediator function in a way that is safeguarding the self-determination of the parties to really grab the reins to make decisions on what they need to decide, rather than some of the ways that we're seeing mediation conducted today? Today, we're going to talk about outrageous hospitality. What does it mean to be outrageously hospitable as a family mediator, or maybe even a civil mediator? And how does that environment become more welcoming for families? You know, the mediation setting that I experienced in my own family law cases was very sterile. It was a white conference room. We were told to go to a table, sit in a room. There was no window. There was a pitcher of water. That was it. We sat there for hours. And I've only experienced mediation personally in a caucus setting, but it was an uncomfortable experience all the way around. And I just feel like there's so much more we can do as mediators to bring a sense of hospitality, a way to kind of disarm people to show up in a space and really think more creatively, rather than that fight, flight, or freeze that so often families with chronic anxiety or chronic conflict are trying to make decisions in a way that their brain they're stuck, and which is why they're reaching out to us as mediators. So before we dive into some actual techniques, how do we bring a more hospitable atmosphere? Let's talk about what's coming into our environments first and foremost. Now, I had been a trained mediator. I'd been trained from a local law school. I'd been a pastor for a number of years, and so I was providing mediation circumstances to families within the congregational setting. I had the advantage of having prayer rooms, some nice environments where families could come and sit on a couch. We'd sit around a low table with a coffee table. I would bring in all kinds of food and try to disarm people as much as I possibly could, because I knew, I saw a lot of my own stress and feelings showing up in the families. And I just didn't want my environment to feel like what I had experienced. I didn't want it to feel like an extension of the courtroom. And so here's some of the ways in which highly anxious family systems will show up to you. First, I want to give credit to Edwin Friedman. It's actually the late Edwin Friedman. He passed away a number of years ago. He wrote a book called A Failure of Nerve. I am taking all of chapter 2. I'm summarizing it here for you in about 5 or 6 minutes. So if you want to go read these 50 pages, you sure can. But I am just going to give you the brief anatomy, or the 5 characteristics of highly anxious family systems right now. So the first characteristic is reactivity. There will be a propensity of these family systems towards reactivity. You will notice that parties will come together for conversation, but they are quick to interrupt each other. They'll even jump to complete each other's sentences. There's constantly taking and making things personal. And communication has this tendency to be marked in more diagnostic patterns, such as "you did," "you are," rather than self-defining I statements. So you'll hear things like, "you are just like your mother," "you are such a control freak." And one of the ways that mediators can kind of flip this around is ask people to make I statements. I know a lot of mediators use this technique. They're addressing this particular characteristic of highly anxious and conflicted people systems. Second is this idea of herding. In highly anxious families, the group will actually almost colonize as its own entity. Or you may notice a parent doing this with kids, leaving another parent out. And they promote a sense of togetherness and feed on the good feelings of the group versus promoting individuality. When you go back to the original story that I told as Dear Family Courts got off the ground, this is literally what I experienced. I would hear things like, you've got such a chip on your shoulder. And it was not okay for me as an individual within this highly anxious family system to reject what the whole group was feeling. They wanted to be managed for how they felt good about themselves and staying together. And so there's almost this sense of the group creates its own self in which the members must adapt to. And so there's this veering towards comfort and emotional kind of meeting the emotional needs of the group, but they're staying in a very specific kind of corner of that space. Problems tend to be formulated in very rigid black and white, all or nothing sorts of categories. And in hurting families, dissent is discouraged. So feelings trump ideas. Peace is desired over progress, and comfort is the most achievable outcome they can get at any cost. And yet therapists would typically have a goal to help people separate so that they don't have to literally separate. This tends to be a fairly immature response as they maintain their sense of togetherness. So you see this level of immaturity in the family system of how they're responding to things for the group to stay together based on emotional feelings at the moment, which leads us to the third characteristic, blame displacement. Oh, yes. Blame displacement, instead of taking responsibility or ownership for one's own problems. This is actually a natural byproduct of the hurting attitude, and you'll notice a whole lot of projecting going on in these families or in divorcing couples or in organizations where there's this casting of blame, projecting issues onto other people rather than reflecting inwardly and taking responsibility for one's own action or the conditions in which they're showing up and presenting with. So accusations will be constantly thrown out by members feeling like they're being controlled, they're being hurt. So you see, again, it's all about the feelings. And then they are talk about obstacles getting placed in their ways and more. And it's usually one person or a couple of people causing all of their problems and this unwillingness to look within. Displacement distracts the family members from the more painful matters that would focus on them or their relationships. This is really interesting. Edwin Friedman says that litigiousness is considered the new middle class form of violence. Litigiousness and violence are twin sisters of these regressed family systems. And when we start to see all of these characteristics present, there's a higher propensity for litigiousness to take place, and litigiousness can be used as a form of violence against others. Friends, this is literally what I have experienced. Literally to the T. I have seen all five of these characteristics in my family of origin, and here's where it all fits together. How did this system come to its place? How did it get to this way, right? Well, there's this idea that there's this quick fix mentality. Let's just quickly look for a solution to solve our problems rather than digging deep. Friedman would say there are laws of maturation. When we look at flowers, the development of flowers, the development of babies, there is no gene for maturity in people. There is a law of maturation. It takes time and years and growing pains to move to a place where growth is taking place in an individual's life and in family systems. But in chronically anxious families, they believe they can actually modify life with techniques, and then they tend to be very impatient. So what makes chronically anxious families' anxiety chronic is not its pain, but the way in which it deals with its pain. They will tend to seek out professionals that will promise the most comfort, not those necessarily offering opportunities for maturation, because they're only focused on symptom relief. They're not looking for someone to help them move through the painful things of like looking within. So they're looking for someone to attend to their symptoms. And this creates an issue for the family mediator, because people are going to show up in your office like this, but people will rarely rise to the level of maturity of their leader unless you know how to lead them very, very well. So if you've been selected to lead a highly anxious family, or they show up in your environment, your ability to lead with a level of health and maturity is going to be critical to this family. So you can see they're using more immature techniques. They're using quick fix mentalities. They're using the courts, and they may have been referred by the court to come to your office, and they're not happy about being there. And they may choose to engage in a healthy way, or they may choose to say, no, this is not going to work. That's not for you to decide as a mediator. I'm just simply giving you context of what's going on in these family systems so that you can help disarm and provide opportunity for growth in a surprising way for families that's actually very attractive. Last, you know, I shared all of this is what I lived with. This is what I grew up with. All of it is coming to a head. The way in which these families they've kind of like grown into this is because there's a poorly differentiated leadership. The lack of a well-differentiated leader in these family systems is always present. There is never a clear leader, someone who's willing to maintain a kind of non-anxious, well-principled presence and sufficiently stand against these attributes of highly anxious systems. So there needs to be someone who can stand in the face of hurting, blaming, reactivity, quick fix mentalities, someone who does not regulate on approval when they're told, oh, you're so cold, you just don't have any feelings, you're so strong-willed, you're uncooperative, you have a chip on your shoulder. Which, by the way, is simply an immediate attack on their individuality. When these things happen in your environment, if you hear these sorts of comments, you're actually on the right path. And what you will experience is sabotage and seduction from those in the family system that don't like what this feels like, because they're trying to maintain this sense of togetherness or having their feelings addressed because they're not willing to look within. Those that do not sabotage or do not seduce might be looking within, and you might be seeing some progress in how they're thinking, how they're showing up into those your environment, and that's a good thing. So one of the ways in which mediators can start off on a better note is, first, get rid of the sterile environment. It is not helping. You're actually creating more anxiety and internal conflict for everyone showing up into those spaces. Do not just have a cup of cold water sitting on the table. I appreciate that, but you can do more. Justice will be defined in your space by how you set the tone first. Yes, justice gets defined by the family too, or the individuals that are coming to conclusion with their own outcomes and how they're going to make decisions. But you can set the tone. You can set a precedence that disarms their highly anxious presence as they're walking into the space. First and foremost, choose a location that is actually more comfortable and warm. Choose an environment where you have couches, where you can have low tables, where you can have soft music playing as people are entering. And you might be thinking like, can I do that? Yes, you can do that. You can have jazz music playing in the background, very softly, classical music. You can have the radio on. All of those can be helpful for people who are highly anxious, which will help disarm them and drop their guard and see you as a human being. Second, you can also, Second, you can have food. Remember the story of the judge I was telling you about, how I was introduced to restorative practices, and the judge was leading restorative environments for those that had committed crimes. They were offered opportunities to work with a community-based alternative dispute resolution process. So a little bit different than mediation, but I think the same, this works in mediation. The judge held an atmosphere where it was potluck at the beginning. So while volunteers were helping him do sentencing circles, there was a potluck atmosphere. Everyone walked into the space. It was in a library conference room. The chairs were all in the middle. The table had been pushed away, and they had set it up as a potluck. And the person who had committed a crime walked in to an environment that was super warm and embracing of them, even though they were showing up for a very hard conversation. It was so disarming for that individual. And I was pleasantly surprised to see how food could be a way to unlock the door for people to start to engage as human beings. It also sets a tone that you care. And when people know that you care, they just react differently. And they're probably more likely to behave themselves and to be a little bit more reflective. Maybe it'll wear off in a little bit, but it's a better way to start the conversation with this sense of outrageous hospitality as they're being welcomed into your environment. So that's my lesson for today, you guys. Be so thoughtful. Even if you're choosing to do this by Zoom, there's no reason why you don't have a picture of your office and the things that matter to you. If you guys were stepping into my office, here's what it would look like. I'm just welcoming you into my environment, even if it's on Zoom. Invite people to bring their coffee and their drinks. Invite them to bring their own food. But if you're doing this live, have something for them to eat. Have options for them to drink. Maybe have San Pellegrinos, something fun to drink, which might be like, this is nice to have something like that. Brownies, whatever you want. When I did this as a pastor, again, I was able to use a prayer room for conversations, and that just had a nicer, softer feel. You know, that was the context I worked in. So be creative within your own context. I always had food, and I always offered that to them, and there would be warm, gentle music in the background, but warm colors on the walls. The lights were much more comfortable. It was relaxing to come in to an environment like that to have a hard conversation. So that's my advice for you today. Outrageous hospitality. Kill them with kindness. Have food. Think more about a non-sterile environment that can de-escalate and disarm these highly anxious family groups that are coming into your spaces. Okay, well, next time we're going to talk about what does justice mean to you and how can you create an environment that helps you achieve your vision as a mediator and set a safe tone for families or for individuals coming in for mediation beyond this starting point. So the environment is important, but now we're going to switch gears and talk about your vision for justice and what you are setting your tone to look like in your environment for these highly anxious families so that you can be more effective as a mediator. All right, friends, I hope you have a great week. Again, if you're interested, you're like, what the heck is this training that Lisa does? What does Jen do? Please check out our website. This is actually like all that we do, and we are creating a blended training option for those that don't necessarily want a court-approved training because they're hoping to work with the courts. Anyone can be trained in family mediation. And if you live in a state or a jurisdiction that lets you train from other locations, we are making our training available to you so you can do some on-demand and then live role-playing. So you don't have to do all 5 days with us. You can actually join us for a day and a half or 2 days just for the role-playing and get all of this training content available to you in an on-demand format that lets you kind of move at your own pace, but also you can bring that into your environment. I mean, you think about what families can experience in the church, what families can experience in the therapeutic environment, what families can experience in social welfare, in child welfare. All of these environments need family mediation techniques and skills so that people can self-determine what they want to do to lead a better legacy, even in the midst of conflict. So friends, I can't wait to connect with you next week. Have a great week. We'll see you soon.